Mr. President, point of clarification, is it appropriate when the time comes, after we looked at this, to ask Councilman Howell, like, why he's making the change that he's making?
Yeah, he's going to propose them and then make his argument, and then we will have discussion. Yep. Everyone, we pass the ball out? Okay. Councilman Howell, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I'd like to start off just by giving congratulatories and background. You know, the last meeting, I complimented one of my colleagues sitting to my left, Councilman Ricks, for advocating and working and introducing legislation for his constituents. This is the exact same thing. I have to compliment and identify Councilman Lattiser for listening to his constituent and moving the ball on this, at least like starting the ball rolling. We can go back and forth about where it started, where it ended up, but the fact of the matter is he got the ball rolling, and I want to commend Councilman Lattiser for that. Moving next, I want to commend Councilman Sinapi and Councilman Gebhardt. Put a lot of time into this and effort, and I think they took something that Councilman Lattiser saw that had to be modernized into the 21st century, and they really did a great job on that. I want to clarify where these amendments come from. One of the things I learned when we first started is I said I didn't understand anything about Airbnbs. I knew nothing about them. I did homework, and more importantly, there were some concerned people that reached out to me. The discussion said that there needs to be maybe a committee or something like that, understanding that the ordinance was already introduced and people wanted to get work done. A lot of networking and back and forth went on, and a lot of discussion to understand and to bring in what Councilman, and I'll call the Sinapi amendment was, but then also to make this a full and complete and full with everyone's input on something that started a short time ago that is now developing into a very strong, which already is under the Sinapi Amendment, a strong piece of legislation that supports Airbnbs and sets it up in our city, but also then goes a little step further with clarification. So, of course, with everything passed, there's amendments that go with it, and there's adjustments that go with it. So that's what this is. So as recommendation by the president, I will start with the bedroom. And simply put, if you notice that the main thing is any room with a residential structure with greater than 70 square feet in area and complies with current applicable Rhode Island state building codes and any current city of Warwick ordinances. So it clarifies the conversation that the building codes are already set by the state, and therefore the state building codes cannot be, if you will, lowered by the city. That's the starting point. State building codes are the starting point. So that is the on page one, that is the First Amendment of section one that is found from lines 29 to 32.
Okay, Councilman Howe. Can we just get the, I believe the planning director's here, just if you have any thoughts or on these as they come, or the building inspector, please feel free to come up. We're going to take them individually, so we're just talking about this particular one, but just want to get the administration's statements as well. Just identify yourself for the record.
Al Decourt, Director of Code Enforcement. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Councilman Howe. Yes, sir. Current applicable code, you have to look at, and that's fine, but when we go into the older homes that were built in the 50s, their bedrooms don't comply with egress windows. And the way the building code works is it's okay to do that, even on replacement of those windows. What we're concerned about is the raised ranch that gets a bedroom put in the basement. So we just want to make sure that there's clarity on that, because raised ranches are notorious for being occupied. The walls are more than 40, the window opening is more than 44 inches off the floor. They're less than 5.7 square feet. So, you know, that wouldn't comply. But I just want to make sure the windows in those bedrooms, they could be awning windows that have been built since the 50s, that they're still code compliant. just to clarify.
And that would be determined by the Rhode Island, this is through the president. I apologize. Thank you, Mr. President. That would be clarified upon your initial investigation through there. And does that meet the Rhode Island code? So if you have, like, is that ordinance set by Rhode Island code?
That is the state building code.
Yes. So the clarification of, so you don't see any issues with the amendment as made?
I just wanted to make sure everybody knew that that's how egress windows work.
Understood.
You build a cape in 1950, they're smaller than, there could be awning windows up high to get more wall space. Those are still code compliant today, as being used as a bedroom since that time, as identified. But to build something new in a raised ranch basement, or to create a space that wasn't used as a bedroom,
right,
then that's when we have to say, no, you can't use this as a bedroom. It's a three-bedroom, not a five.
Right, which therefore it would mean, yes, it doesn't meet the state code. So
correct.
The amendment does have the right language.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that everybody was on the same page and understood how our process works in the field.
And I, Mr. President, I would like to also make a statement. I do apologize to my colleagues. I know this is here late, but as I got this to the solicitor I submitted my amendments for discussion very late. But that was because, again, discussion, research, working together outside. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Comments from members of the council? Councilman Gephardt.
So just a clarification, I might default to the solicitor on this, but I know bedroom is obviously the term being defined. Is it specific enough in here that the room in the residential structure, which is 70 square feet in area, is complying with, and again, I'm not a building expert, but do the state building codes outline what is defined as a bedroom? And is this specific enough to link the definition to the building code definition of a bedroom? Because, you know, just because it's a room, as meeting with the building codes, may not inherently make it applicable as a bedroom.
I would respectfully defer to our building official.
The current applicable code requires that a bedroom be a minimum of 70 square feet with an egress window. You go back to a 1950s cape, they're probably most likely 70 square feet, but it's already a complying room that was of 1950s building code or 60s building code. Property maintenance code also states in there that a bedroom is 70 square feet with a number of occupants. So there's a lot of hierarchy that goes along with the code.
I think my question is just as it, you know, in regards to this definition, are we clearly linking the definition of bedroom to the definition of bedroom as the building official just read off to us?
It's a nuance here. So this actually aligns with the original draft, I believe, or at least one of the preceding versions prior to the amendments made at the December meeting. So this restores the prior language, and the linkage in the terminology for bedroom is tying it into occupancy limits later in the ordinance is the pretty much the only other place the term bedroom is applicable. So making clear that this is a 70 square foot area compliant with all applicable codes would be linked to the capacity limits that follow it later in the ordinance.
Would it make sense to cite the state building code which describes bedrooms so that it's explicit that specific code we are referring to is as applies to a bedroom.
I think the definition presented in the amendment here provides that linkage between the requisite standard.
Okay, thank you. I'm comfortable with that.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. I think this is really pushing the envelope at becoming or creating a dangerous situation, because the first two words on line 29, it says any room in a residential structure which is greater than 70 feet. That means you can have people residing in any room, whether it's the basement, whether it's the attic, a room above the garage, a shed, anywheres in that dwelling. And that becomes very dangerous, because in any room is not required to have certain safety things like smoke detectors or carbon monoxide detectors. To change it to this, I think, is very dangerous. I see no problems with the current language. It clearly defines what a bedroom requires certain protections. As the director said, it requires egress windows. Oftentimes in basements, you can't do egress windows. I know, you can't do them. And if you create a situation which is ambiguous at best, and you allow that envelope to be pushed, and you go beyond the requirements of that home with respect to how many people in a bedroom, that's defined. What's required with, you know, the protections. I think you're really going down a dangerous road. So this amendment, I don't see the need for it. I think it really complicates things, and certainly, and further, I just quickly scanned some of these amendments. It gets further complicated with other amendments with regard to the outs system.
Mr. President? I'm sorry, Councilman, Mr. President?
Yes, just stick to this particular
yep.
amendment.
Oh, then. No, I will. So, if I may elaborate on the amendment, any room, and I understand what the councilman, a valid point, but I'd like to read the rest of the amendment. Any room in a residential structure with greater than 70 square feet in area and complies with current applicable Rhode Island state building codes and any current city of Warwick ordinances.
Does it?
Yes, please.
Mr. Chairman. So, Councilman, the language you just read does not establish a definition for a bedroom. So a building code requirement for a living room with people sleeping on a couch doesn't work. Or putting a cot in a kitchen. Or you have a loft in your attic and you put a couple of cots up there and people are sleeping up there. That doesn't qualify as a bedroom. And without that language defined as a bedroom in accordance with, there's very strict requirements in the building codes, both local and state building codes, with bedrooms. And those requirements are for the safety of the occupants in those rooms. So again, I think it's a very dangerous approach to negating that language defined as a bedroom, because then you leave it for free for all. So, okay, I'm going to have six people in my house today. I don't have to worry about only two per bedroom. I'm going to put six because there is no definition for bedroom. I'm going to put one up in the attic, one in the loft in the garage, and one in the basement. I think it's just very dangerous. With all due respect, Mr. Chairman, I think that That amendment is problematic.
Senator Walsh.
Director DeCourt, could you? In listening to the discussion here, is it your opinion that if to address concerns just raised, would it make sense as part of this amendment to insert language following the words residential structure and insert something along the lines of defined as a bedroom? So it would read something like any room in a residential structure defined as a bedroom, which is greater than, et cetera, et cetera. So it would incorporate by reference that definition of state building code bedroom, which follows, and it wouldn't limit it to only the distinction of incorporating the state building code's definition of bedroom, but also all other state building codes. Would that make sense to you?
No. I'm just thinking that I think in the field and in our records, when we do our inspection, we need to identify which rooms are approved as bedrooms. And that way we have a record of it. I had people sleep on my living room floor, on my couch, and but they're unknown to my home when they come over, Super Bowl game, just stay over, don't drive. So I think we need to have better documentation in case something happens that they invite another 10 people over and have a cookout and people end up sleeping in different rooms. It's going to happen no matter what, whether the language is there. I think just better documentation on our end and understanding of the person who's renting or the rentee, rentor, we're all on the same page.
Mr. President, if I can rephrase, the definition presented here, are you comfortable with the language presented, the changes being made by the Howe Amendment, or would you, in your expertise, view there needing to be any other clarification of this amendment in order to meet your goals?
I understand Councilman Lattice's concerns, because it says any room that's greater than 70 square feet. So like you said, it could be a living room, it could be a dining room, it could be attic space. There's also other criteria that a bedroom has to meet, especially if it's an attic space, that you can't have so much of a sloped ceiling and things of that nature. So there's a lot more that goes into our inspection process. But I do understand what Councilman Lattister is saying. It's because that gives freedom to any room that's over 70 square feet. But also has that, especially like in a 1960s scape, you're not going to have an egress window, or you may, but most likely you're not going to have one. So we have to make that determination in the field that this room has been used as a bedroom and not newly created as a bedroom. Because if I take a living room and make it a bedroom, then they have to be current code compliant with egress windows and such, detectors and things of that nature. So,
so Director, between the two amendments, the SNAP amendment, the original language that we're working off right now, a bedroom, a room defined as a bedroom in accordance with the applicable building code regulations as determined by the building official. Do you like that one better, or are you more comfortable with that one, or what Councilman Howe is proposing under bedroom, any room in a residential structure that is greater than 70 square feet in an area and complies with current applicable Rhode Island state building codes and any current city Warwick ordinances? Which one, in your expert opinion, is clear, and which one is more workable for you, who's going in your department, is going to be the ones going out and enforcing this?
The SNAPI amendment is easier enforceable.
Okay, thank you. Councilman Ricks, I know you've had your hand up.
Thank you. I don't want to belabor a point here. I agree with Councilman Lattiser. A concern to piggyback on his would be, I've seen hotel rooms where there are two double beds, and so one would think that, okay, maybe you have a maximum of four people in that room. Wrong. I've seen situations where you manage people manage to pile 10 people into that kind of bedroom, four sleeping on the beds, five on the floor, one in the bathtub. So I'm not concerned really about people sleeping necessarily in the attic or in the kitchen or in the bathroom necessarily. But when we have a definition of bedroom, and it's important to keep in mind that when we are making a definition for a confined ordinance like this, where the definition in this particular ordinance, we're not trying to redefine this particular word for the entire world for all any and all purposes. We're trying to define this particular word for the purposes of this specific ordinance, where it says effectively that the term bedroom being defined as any room in a residential structure, certain area, and complies with current applicable Rhode Island state building codes and any current City of Warwick ordinances, then one can read into that that, okay, if you have a bathroom that's more than 70 square feet and the plumbing is good and the bathroom is in total compliance with all of the codes, then it counts as a bedroom for the purpose of the ordinance, which for the purpose of the ordinance, you look over on page 3, section 510.8, where the number of bedrooms is used to define how many people may stay in there. So you can end up with a situation where we look at a house, everybody can agree that, yeah, this is a house with three bedrooms, and we expect that X number of people are going to be there based on three bedrooms, but, oh, it's got an awful large walk-in closet over 70 square feet. It's got a kitchen over 70 square feet. It's got a couple of bathrooms over 70 square feet. And then you end up with a situation where more than double the anticipated number of people are able to get legally crammed in there. Whether or not they're actually sleeping in that bathroom, we don't necessarily want to see that kind of density of bunk beds getting stacked in all of these different bedrooms and having a half dozen people sleeping in one cramped little bedroom. So that's my comments. I'll try not to belabor the point more.
Well, thank you. I think we are really drilling down and going in the weeds here. I do just want to highlight what the building inspector said, the expert here, that he is comfortable with the Sanapi amendment between these two. Councilman Sanapi.
So I just wanted to check the building code and the Warwick ordinances to see if they establish the definition. And unfortunately, they don't really help us much. They add a portion where it's at least 50 square feet of floor space for each additional occupant. And a bit about how it can't be, where is it? Has to be waterproof and damp-proof, but not much else. So it does appear that the concern is a valid one when it comes to the fact that by changing it to any room, you really bring in a lot, and all it has to do is comply with a pretty low bar. So if the code or the ordinances did have a better definition, I'd be fine with it. But because they don't, I'm inclined to agree with Councilman Lattiser.
Thank you. Are there any comments from members of the public on this proposed amendment at this time? Yep, please come to the mic. Yeah, just this before us. We're going to do each one individually.
I can see the point that Mr. DeCourtis is making and Mr. Lattiser. It could use more definition on this. You know, looking at state building code, which I have reviewed in some areas here, it should be defined a bit more. And the just to let everybody know, I think the assessor's records that are in the city have a quite a definitive view. It shows a lot of detail as to the bedrooms that are there. Keeping in mind, again, that this is not a change or expansion of use, unless, of course, I'm assuming if people want to add bedrooms beyond what the assessor's records have, that would be an expansion of use for it. But not being a change of use and equally applying the same standards to either a single-family home when it's being sold, to, you know, like the fire marshal certificate that has to be done, or a long-term rental, you know, making sure the standards are equally applied for those uses also. So that's my comment on that. Mr. Sinapi's definition there seems to be a bit more in line with that. So I agree with that.
Additional comments from members of the public just on this amendment? Yep, take your time.
I also agree with the points that were brought up. I didn't even think of the attic space or the bathrooms. As ridiculous as it sounds, I could see it possibly happening. My one question to the building official, I don't know if I'm allowed to ask, if the fire marshal goes in, is that something that the fire marshal, if they see an attic or something that doesn't have an egress window, would the fire marshal actually call that a violation and kind of say it's not appropriate, or would that not be a part of their inspection?
Jim?
Go ahead. Yes, please.
Fire marshal only has jurisdiction over smoke and CO detectors.
Oh, that's all.
That's
okay.
It. One and two family.
Director, can you just do it on the mic? We have, they can't pick it up at home.
Fire marshal only has jurisdiction over the smoke and CO detectors in a one and two family.
So I do agree with the concerns that were brought up then. So I would, Councilman Sinapi's version, I think, would be more accurate for, to be fair with everybody's concerns.
Thank you. Are there any other comments from members of the public on this amendment at this time? Director?
Mr. Chairman, getting back to the gentleman's statement about tax assessor records, we use those as a benchmark only because when they go out and do reval and do their research out there, they open the door if they can get in and say, well, there's a bed in that room. That's a bedroom. So that may not be a legal bedroom. So that's why we've been called out on numerous occasions to verify the quantity of bedrooms by the tax assessor.
Thank you. Any other comments from members of the public? Okay. Councilman Howe, any other comments?
No, because before we vote on this, none, and if it's okay or admissible, due to the testimony from the public, the testimony from my colleagues, I have no problem withdrawing this amendment.
Okay.
Thank you.
Are you ready to take a vote on that?
Thank you.
Is there any objection to withdrawing of that amendment? Okay, hearing none, the amendment, it's so ordered, the amendment has been struck. Councilman Howe.
Move to withdraw amendment.
Okay, we've already withdrawn it, we're all set, so we are back to full-on Sinapi amendment. If you have any additional amendments at that time.
So, Mr. President, I decide what I'll do at this time, and I want to make just a brief statement about this. This came to us about a month ago or a couple months ago. It was worked on. And then, of course, Councilman Sinapi and Councilman Gebhardt. We all kind of got the challenge from our constituents, from the business owners in the city, to go ahead and be inclusive of everyone in our best ability, and my best ability, and the best ability of the invested people, and the best ability of this council, and our city official, our planning department and building department. We tried to put together a real good part. So I want to go ahead and have no more amendments to add to this. I want to commend and thank Councilman Sinapi and Councilman Gebhardt, Councilman Lattiser, and all my colleagues in the departments and the people. But there will be some amendments that I will bring forward in the future to give people an idea so we can have better communication, a time to discuss. I think it would be best that we do that as we do tweak this and make it a, if not the best ordinance in the state. Thank you, Mr. President. I have no further amendments.
Thank you. And as the councilman is indicating, this is an ordinance which would take two passages from members of the city council. So if there was a vote this evening on something, it would come back again before the council in a month where additional amendments can be discussed and made at that time. So any ordinance needs two passages. So, Councilman.
Mr. President, just to further provide context here, revisiting this down the road, it is reopening zoning, so it would end up restarting a process of sending items to the planning board for a separate recommendation down the road. So I would suggest perfecting as many items as you can upon this instance of the item. Subsequent amendments to the zoning ordinance would end up having to go back through the planning board for their recommendation and then public hearing and two passages of an ordinance. Just for context.
So for Mr. President,
go ahead.
For follow-up, so if we make any further amendments after this first passage or if I miss the deadline of the second passage, Solicitor.
I was merely making a clarification that as we have gone through the public process whereby an item was introduced, it was referred to the planning board for their recommendation. They sent back a recommendation to us. We held a formal public hearing on the matter in December, held it without taking action. We have continued it at the city's discretion to address the matter. And that's where we are this evening. We've made amendments. The point I was trying to make is if we conclude a process on this item and pass a change to the ordinance and then want to revisit it after that fact, mm-hmm. it requires a restart of the full process. Anything that we do now, or if we continue, you know, after this evening, if there were other amendments made prior to formal adoption of this change to the zoning ordinance, we wouldn't have to. So I was just unclear about whether or not there'd be any other amendments coming tonight should the council take action on the matter.
There will be no more further amendments from myself. I plan on reviewing and fine-tuning this, working with my colleagues and the investors.
So it may be, and if I'm interpreting what the solicitor is saying, if your intent is to come to make additional amendments at another time, you may want to ask for a motion to hold, correct? Because if we were to make a motion to favorable action on the at as whole at this time for first passage, if new amendments were come through that process, is that correct?
So I guess we've covered the two extremes, and now is the middle of if we pass something this evening for first passage, and upon further amendment at a later date prior to codification, it reverts back to first passage, but does not go back to public hearing.
That's what I thought, right? Yeah, we just clarify that one more time, please.
Sure. If the council does no further action this evening, we are still on first passage of a sub B that has been amended this evening. If we make it can be brought up at a later meeting, more amendments made, it is still on first passage. If the council acts on something this evening, it would be first passage, which means in a month we'd be back with this item before us for second passage. If any amendments are made at that point, it reverts back to first passage. If we finish the process at a later meeting and get second passage and the mayor approves and it's enrolled as we normally do, to make any further changes to the zoning ordinance would restart an entire new cycle. That's the distinction of when and if amendments or changes are made within this process.
Right. And that would be after second passage. if there's a second passage.
Yeah, if it's passed and approved by the mayor or allowed to become law, then we're, it concludes this process, and further changes require a restart of the full planning process.
Okay. All right. Any individuals that haven't had a chance to speak yet? Councilwoman Travis.
I wanted another question.
Okay. Solicitor Walsh, we have a motion to request to move the question. If you could just walk me through that.
So what we have before us this evening is PCO 422, which has been a sub A, which has been amended by the Sinapi Amendment, which would be in the future known as sub B. At this time, there are no further amendments pending.
Let him explain, and then we'll call on other council members.
So a motion to move the previous question would, if seconded, end debate on this item and bring us to a vote on the item that is before us, which is favorable action on this, what is known as the Sinapi Amendment, plus the CO, the deletion of the two on CO.
Okay, so that is, the councilwoman has made a motion to, and she's looking for a second. Second by Councilman Lattiser. Any questions or comments on this? Councilman McRoy hasn't spoken yet? Oh, you seconded. Councilman McRoy seconded as well. Councilman Ricks.
Yes, I have a concern that 510.2G causes this ordinance to be unconstitutional. There's a simple fix. I would request the opportunity to make an amendment before we have a vote on this.
Solicitor Walsh.
So it's an undebatable motion unless if the councilman wants to withdraw, if no objection, to address other things. If not, then we proceed to the vote.
Okay, so Councilwoman Travis, your motion has been moved and seconded. If you would like to withdraw that and allow the councilman to make his amendments, he can. If not, we will call the vote. So Councilwoman Travis, what's your pleasure? Okay, so the clerk will call
the roll. So the clerk calls the roll of the Sinapi Amendment as amended.
So the clerk will call for favorable action on the Sinapi Amendment as amended. Yes.
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 Abstain.
Mr. Sinapi?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. PCO 4-22 sub B has been passed for first passage. Next up, we're going to go back on the agenda. We have finished general communications, executive communications, council minutes, public comment. We are now moving to the consent calendar. PCR 9-23, a resolution relative to bids, committee report, finance.
Favorable action.
For action, Councilman Howe.
More favorable action.
Second by Councilman Foley. Go ahead, Councilman Howe.
Bid 2023-318 Alpha, overhead door repair and replacement. Bid 2023-318 Bravo. Bid 2023-075. Bid 2023-330. Bid 2023-307, bid 2022-027. That concludes the consent calendar, Mr. President.
Councilman Howe, are there any questions from members of the council on the finance docket consent calendar that were not asked earlier this evening in finance? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll for favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Harrison? Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Yes.
Consent passes. Councilman Howe, I believe three items have been removed from the consent calendar.
Yes, Mr. President. Favorite, there are former bid 2023-294 Alpha is now PCR 11-23. Committee voted favorable action.
For action, Councilman Howe.
More favorable action.
Second by Councilman Foley. Correct, Councilman Foley? Second that? Second by Councilman Foley. Okay. Any questions or comments on which is now PCR 11-23? Councilman Lattiser.
Thank you, Mr. President. So, as I stated in the committee meeting, the things that I objected to in the committee meeting have been going on for a very long time. There is no way that I am going to be asking questions behind closed doors about these type of items any longer. I'm going to ask them on the floor. To come before the council and tell me specifically that I should have asked for this yesterday, the day before, is absurd. As the responsible person of, in this case, a department, you should know the answer. When you look at the disparity of a bid of such significant magnitude, the first question you should ask yourself is, how many of those components do I buy? And if it's one, don't worry about it. I shouldn't have to tell someone that you need to do that. You need to have that information. You know why? Because I come from the business world. I come from the area where these dollars and cents come directly out of my pocket. I shouldn't have to even ask that type of question. That information should be readily available. To go along and continue to endorse these types of bids, that the math is wrong, the discounts are not equaling what the results are. You have the disparity of $200 or $300 in an item that if you don't research and do the math now, when you get that invoice, do you think for 1 minute anybody's going to go back and, oh, let me go back and make sure that those discounts are right? You weren't prepared here. You didn't do it then. You're not going to do it later. The invoice is going to come in, and it's going to be much higher in some cases than it should be. There is bids that come through where there's no discounts. We have bids in this package right here, in this item right here, that say list price, net cost. How do I know that math is right? If I don't have the right numbers when you show me the discount, why do you think for 1 minute that this council person is going to believe the math is right when that discount is invisible? It's not there. To further aggravate me with this is the concept that, well, nobody bid, so we need to award everything to everybody because we got to have this. Really? So that to me is condoning just letting the vendors do whatever they want for whatever reason. Maybe they were just lazy. Maybe they didn't feel like bidding. Maybe they didn't get the bid in the mail. Maybe they don't want to bid. But then to just subjectively say, doesn't matter, you didn't bid. These other folks, they went through all the math. They went through all of the necessary things to bid. They took the time out of their business schedule to do it, and they did what they're supposed to do. But those of you who didn't bother for whatever reason, that's okay. Don't bother. We're just going to go ahead and say fine and pass it along. That is nothing that I am going to sign on to. The people that elected me to present, to protect their nickels and dimes. I remember years ago when I first got on this council, someone came before this body and said, Councilman, it's only $20. You know what? Might only be $20 to someone, but for those folks that are out there going to work 8 hours a day and making far less than a lot of people we know, $20 is a lot of money. There's no way I'm going to continue supporting these items if I don't have the proper documentation. You want these meetings to get shorter? You want me to ask less questions and have less detail? Then you need to do your homework that you want to do and make sure that the questions I've been asking for 10 years are here. And this will be really short. When I ask, why doesn't this add up? You have an answer. When I ask, why are you going to give someone a bid that is $300 higher than they're supposed to be, or $200 or $100 higher, and you don't know? Not me. I'll be voting no on this, as well as the other two PCRs, and all for the same reason. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments on PCR 1123? Councilman Howe.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would just like to clarify that it seems that the comment is always made that I'm doing it because it shortens time. The comment is made if I see something, or if anyone on this committee sees something, or if any council person sitting in this audience sees, or sitting in this chamber, sees something that they have a question on, we call the director. It's not a secret meeting. It's not a backdoor meeting. It's a courtesy. It's an understanding. It's a professional action. We call the director and say, we noticed this, we noticed that. We don't notice everything maybe the other council people may notice, but we notice it and we call and we ask the question. And a lot of times when the directors or the city officials come up here, they say, per our conversation, it was discovered. And then also I've witnessed it numerous times where members of this committee, including myself, have said, hey, can you please explain because of this ambiguity right here in this statement? It's a courtesy. It's not a gotcha, which is what it comes across as. It's a courtesy. It's a, I'm going to ask you questions on this, and if you don't have the answer and you don't get me the answer, it's going to come out. It doesn't have to be a blitz attack. It can be a planned, accurate, basically diversion from an attack. The second thing is I understand what the councilman is saying as far as the prices. If we've learned anything in the last year, 2 years, prices are variable. They are constantly moving like the tides. And therefore, I understand, I am fine seeing a percentage. I don't want to go back and forth, but there were statements made along the lines of, we don't do our homework, this committee does their homework, this committee does their homework very accurately. We make our phone calls, we don't wait until we come in here and expect the department heads, especially the purchasing director who purchases 90% of the things in the city, we don't expect them to have an answer to the price of a screw. It's simple. It's a courtesy. It's a professional courtesy, and it keeps the city moving. And that's what we do. And I commend the committee for the way they've conducted themselves and then the proper procedures that they've used and the respectable procedures they use. Thank you. I plan on voting in support of this ordinance.
Thank you. We'll give a lot of latitude here. We're only supposed to be speaking on PCR 11-23. So Councilman Ricks will give you an opportunity, but I think we're just going to keep it to PCR 11-23. We allow other individuals, they had their time, but we need to stick to the issue at hand.
I think that when persons from the administration come up to speak on this PCR, explain the details, I think that it's perfectly fine for us to have conversations relating to those items. Those items, everything needs to be prepared in order in the packets. And when we see mathematical errors and the like repeated, where the percentages, as Councilman Lattiser was alluding to, the percentages don't align to the math, that's a source of concern. It does remind me of when I was back in law school, we had professors who, the professor wouldn't give us a courtesy call and let them know in advance exactly what questions we were at, they were going to ask us. They put us on the spot in front of our 50 or more fellow students. They really drilled us with questions. And I'm sure that others who have been in that position here on the council, thankfully, I don't think any of us were ever in quite such a spot. But there were students who were literally left in tears. It was brutal. But those professors, they let us know, hey, it's not about me being mean or anything like that. This is about preparing you for the real world. well, you're on the city council, spending over $300 million of taxpayer money. This is the real world. There has to be an expectation of preparedness. And none of us on the city council, I am confident, none of us are raising questions here as a matter of being mean. It's a matter of accountability, transparency, making sure that everything is in order, that everyone is prepared to give accurate, full answers to all of the questions that can be raised. And there is that expectation that there is that going to be that level of preparedness for these types of questions in advance. Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional questions of PCR 11-23? Hearing none, the clerk will call for favorable action.
Ms. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr.
Gianna? Yes.
Mr. Powell?
Yes.
Mr.
No.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
No.
Mr. Snapping?
Yes.
Ms. Travis?
Yep.
7 yes, 2 no.
Thank you. Councilman Howell, the second item that has been removed from the consent calendar.
Mr. President, bid 2023-294 Bravo, original equipment manufacturers, parts, and various vehicles is now PCR 12-23. Committee voted favorable action.
For action, Councilman Howell.
Move favorable action.
Second by Councilman Foley. Any questions or comments on this PCR? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll for favorable action.
Ms. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt?
House. Yes.
Mr. Lattison?
No.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
No.
Mr. Snapping?
Yes.
Ms. Travis?
Yes.
7 yes, 2 no. Motion passes.
Thank you. Motion passes. The third item that was pulled from the consent counter, Councilman Howe.
Thank you, Mr. President. It was bid 2023-293. Various replacement automotive parts is now PCR 13-23. Committee moved favorable action.
For action, Councilman Howe.
Favorable action.
Second by Councilman Foley. Any questions or comments on this? Councilman Lattiser.
Mr. President, as I stated earlier, I'll be voting no on this for all the same reasons. And by the way, this has nothing to do with price fluctuations. This has to do with simple math 101. Nothing to do with price fluctuations. I'm very cognizant of that. I deal with it in my world every day. This is about fiscal and financial responsibility. This is about accountability. It's about having the simple answers for your day-to-day business operations. And that's what happens in the private sector. You are accountable. You're accountable for invoices. You're accountable for errors in those invoices. And it's not something that's tolerated time after time after time. Somewhere along the line, the math has got to stop working. I'll be voting no on this as well.
Thank you. Any additional questions or comments? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll for favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt? Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
No.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
No.
Mr. Snapping?
Yes.
Ms. Travis?
Yes.
7 yes, 2 no. Motion passes.
Thank you. The motion passes. We're now moving to unfinished business. First up is PCO 23-22. This is for second passage committee report ordinance. For action, Councilman Lattiser.
Move favorable action on PCO 23-22.
Second by Councilwoman Travis. Any questions or comments that were not asked earlier this evening in the ordinance committee? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll for favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
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 Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. Next up is PCO 4-22. We have already addressed that. So now we're moving to new business. Number one this evening is PCO 2-23, committee report ordinance. Hold a 2-6. Number two this evening is PCO 7-23, committee report intergovernmental.
Favorable as amended, Mr. President.
Okay, for action, Councilman Ricks.
Move favorable action.
And with an amendment coming. Second by Councilman Foley. Councilman Ricks, go ahead. And Councilman Lattiser, second that as well.
I'll move the amendment as read into the record.
Okay.
The amendment would make the language now read, in January of each year, the city council president shall cause to be initiated a request to an actuarial firm for the purpose of scheduling a presentation relative to the financial status and outlook of the city of Warwick at a public hearing prior to the first public hearing on the city budget.
Okay, that is the motion. And second, I believe Councilman Lattiser has to be a co-sponsor as well.
Yes.
Correct. Okay.
Thank you.
Any questions or comments on the amendment? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll on the amendment. Yes.
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 Thank you. The amendment passes. Councilman Ricks.
Move favorable action as amended.
Second by Councilman Lattiser. Any questions or comments on PCR 7-23 as amended? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll for favorable action as amended.
Mr. McDonald,
yes.
Yes.
Mr. Yes.
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 Favorable as amendment passes. Thank you. Number three this evening is PCR 8-23, Committee Report Intergovernmental.
Mr. President, hold till February 6th.
I have favorable on this one.
8-23? Favorable.
Yeah. What's the one we did? Councilman McElroy, I have favorable action on this. On the traffic study.
Favorable action, Mr. President.
Okay. For action, Councilman Sinapi. Second by Councilman Lattiser. Any questions or comments on PCR 8-23? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll for favorable action. Yes.
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 Thank you. The motion passes. We're now moving to unanimous consent. Ward 1, anything to docket under unanimous consent? Ward 2.
Pass.
Ward 3.
Pass.
Ward 4.
Pass.
Ward 5.
Pass.
Ward 6.
Pass.
Ward 7 passes. Ward 8. Ward 9. Pass. Councilwoman Travis.
If there be no further business of this honorable body, I move to a docket session.
All in favor of moving the docket session, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Ward 1, anything to docket this evening? Ward 2.
Pass.
Ward 3.
One item, Mr. President. An ordinance in regards to amending PCO 16-20 alpha permitting and regulating of charitable donation bins. I also asked Councilman Ricks if he would like to co-sponsor with me.
Could you repeat that, please?
Absolutely. It's a docketing memo for an ordinance in regards to amending PCO 16-20 alpha permitting and regulating charitable donation bins.
The ordinance committee.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Ward 4.
Pass.
Ward 5.
Yes, Mr. President, I have one. It's a resolution. It's for a resolution in regards to erecting a stop sign at the corner of Lighthouse Lane and Harborview Drive, and I do have a favorable traffic study.
Public safety. Ward 6.
Pass.
Ward 7, I do have one. I'm going to docket 1, which is a resolution relative to ratification of the fire contract. And that'll be in the Finance Committee. Ward 8, anything to docket? Ward 9. We are adjourned. We will see you on the 30th. Thank you.